Jerry Palm will join us in the final hour of the program. We'll certainly get into a lot of college hoops with him coming up at 1 o'clock. Don't forget ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9 Game 2 is your home for MTSU Blue Raider basketball. Listen to MTSU basketball 94.9 Game 2 this week, Thursday. They're on the road at Southern Miss, tip at 7 o'clock. Saturday on the road at Louisiana Tech, tip at 6 o'clock. You can hear all that on 94.9 Game 2. Win in the Borough. Also tune into 97.5 for the game and 95.1 for Game 2. So if you're looking for MTSU basketball Thursday and Saturday, 94.9 Game 2 is your place and 95.1 down in the Borough. Like I said, Jerry Palm coming up at 1 o'clock. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick. We say hello to our buddy Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. Give him a follow. Vinny, how you doing?
D&D, I'm good. Hope you guys are.
Could anybody see what happened in Tuscaloosa? Wow. I mean, we talked about it last week, how of an important week it was going to be. They get it started off right with a big win in Rupp Arena on Tuesday night. And, man, it did not translate to Saturday. They went down there, and they got annihilated.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week where you could see Tennessee losing at some point down the stretch or maybe even in Tuscaloosa. But to get blasted like that, nope. Hey, it surprised Rick Barnes. If it surprised Rick Barnes, it certainly should surprise a lot of us. Didn't think they had that in them. I thought they were a little bit more dialed in. Doesn't mean they're a perfect team that couldn't be beat, but the efforts and just weren't playing with conviction or confidence early. Just too many things went wrong. It was a surprise for sure.
But I did say, I think, you know, privately, they wouldn't say this publicly, but privately, if you were to ask them, okay, what would you sign up for before you play Kentucky and Alabama this week? What would you sign up for? I said, I think they would sign up for a split all day and be okay with it. Now, you're going in with the intentions, especially when you take the first one, to get the sweep. But I think in the end, when the smoke clears, if you get a split in Lexington and in Tuscaloosa, I think you have to be pleased with it. I know Rick Barnes probably isn't pleased, especially how the loss played out. But still, I mean, to get a split, those were two very tough road games.
There's no doubt. And look, I think this game, in addition to looking at Tennessee, I think this game highlighted the upside that Alabama has. The talent that they've got is pretty good in this league, as good as there is in this league, I think, in top to bottom roster. The thing is they've been so inconsistent, so up and down. They don't share the basketball like they did in that game. That was their best game. So it was a little bit of both that had that kind of result. But you're right. When you take a step back, is it the worst thing to split two difficult road games against good teams? No. And then maybe you needed another mental reset for this team moving forward, that you didn't feel like they were reading their press clippings, but maybe you needed another little reality check. Rick Barnes says he's not about reality checks, but he's talked about maturity at different points this year. And this maybe will be a good lesson. The last time they were lost significantly and were handled was by Auburn, and they ran off 9 of 10 after that. Now, this is a 28-point loss, much worse, but will they have a similar type of response and focus and reaction to it? We'll see. I'm not sure I anticipate that, but it's hard to know, and this is another level of blasting they took at Alabama.
Yeah, did I see this correctly? Did their charter break down and they were unable to take off from Tuscaloosa? Did they have to bus it back home?
They did.
Yeah, that trip was just not meant to be, right?
Well, it gave them more time to think about it.
Is that a good thing?
No.
It's probably a long, quiet bus ride.
Hey, at least the coaches, I'm sure, on all their their laptops and iPads and everything, had everything set up to where they could break down that film. But that had to be painful for them too.
Yeah. Did you see the projections yesterday? Our first look at the selection committee's top 16. They had Tennessee as a four seed. Obviously, that would have looked different if they would have gone down and beaten Alabama, I would say they would have probably been projected as a three with an arrow pointing up. But what did you think of the top 16?
I think it's in that range. I think you'll probably see Tennessee fluctuate from that 2-4 line based on how things are going, not only with them, but around college basketball. There are a ton of teams that lost in the top 25
this week. Lots of upsets. Yeah.
Yep. And that's another point, Darren, is that this is college basketball. There have been seven top 25 teams, counting Tennessee, so six others, that have 20-point losses or more in at least one game this year, and there's a bunch more in the top 15 that have lost by double digits that really weren't a true factor in that game, too. So this is the state of college basketball. They're still kids, and you're going to have these types of performances. Not making an excuse for them, just saying that's the reality of basketball. Maybe they'll figure it out and kind of be, you know, back on that upscale to stay in that range. I think so, but you know, who do you trust in those areas in seeds 1-4?
I don't trust anybody.
Really?
No, I don't trust anybody. Look, Virginia, for all the praise that Virginia gets, they've got game day there on Saturday. They've got the gym packed. They're all into it. And that night, they're hosting Virginia Tech, and they lose at home to Virginia Tech. How could you trust anybody right now in the country? Purdue lost two games this week. Everybody loves them. We had Dana Ford on earlier in the show. He said Purdue is the best team he's seen in the country. No disrespect to anybody else they've played, but who they've played, he said Purdue by far was – he said the best team, but you can't trust anybody. You just can't, which I think, it's about getting hot at the right time. Tennessee, even with the loss Saturday, they're 9-2 in their last 11 as they're coming down the stretch of their regular season. It's really about just getting hot at this time of year and seeing if it can carry over into your conference tournament and then hopefully eventually into the NCAA tournament. Because I think if you can just get your team hot, I think anybody can be beaten this year in the country.
No, I agree with that. And so you're going to see Tennessee in this area, I think. And, you know, a lot of it is matchups as well. And Rick Barnes, he has the big picture in mind, even though he talks about next game. They want this team to be able to function in the postseason in those games that matter, because that's what ultimately he thinks this team has the potential to do, is go deep in the NCAA tournament. Where they're at, how they're playing, we'll see on that. But yeah, it is wide open, and it's interesting to see the reaction of some fans, more so on social media this week. Some Tennessee fans just crushing the team, and it really talking about oh, we need to start talking about one seeds and just really getting on this basketball team as if this has been a regular thing we've seen from this team. Maybe that's frustration, I don't know, but this, you got to take a step back and look at this team and say, hey, they've got depth, they've got terrific coaching, and they've only lost two games in a row one time, and that was the Arkansas-Auburn two-game stretch that started them to really get that hot streak the first time. So I think they'll be fine moving forward, and they'll be more up and down probably with everybody else around them.
Yeah, I guess, Vince, one thing it does tell you is people are starting to pay attention. If the expectations are going higher in their mind, then
right,
that's not an all bad thing. And if you look at their schedule with six games left, it matches up well. I'd be surprised if they lost more than one, and I wouldn't be that surprised if they won out. I think it's possible.
Well, ESPN, BPI, Willie, thinks they will win out in terms of those percentages that they do game by game, and they have them at 71% or higher for all six of those games, including 92% against South Carolina coming up. So they have two games against Georgia, South Carolina at home on tomorrow night at 9 Eastern, then at Georgia, then Florida at home, and then you got a tough two-game road stretch at Ole Miss and at Mississippi State. If you're looking for a loss, it might be in those middle
three
games, Florida,
yeah,
Ole Miss, or Mississippi State is pretty good. And then Georgia to close out the regular season at home. So there's probably at least one more loss in there, but they could very well run the table again and get a one or a two seed for the SEC tournament. Right now they'd be a three seed losing that tiebreaker to Florida.
And so, you know, when you saw the committee put out their thing, I made this point that there's probably going to be a team that wasn't even mentioned yesterday that makes a run somewhere in the country that jumps way up in there. My point is you can't get too caught up in who's a three, who's a four, who's a five, all that stuff
right
now. But at the same time, what did you think you learned as far as where Tennessee fits in the picture right now? You mentioned the games down the stretch. I think Florida still has the type of team that could get hot, and if they can beat Florida in Knoxville February 21st, I think that would be one more big win. Other than that, as you mentioned, the names of the teams they play between now and the end of the regular season, that's really the only chance they have of obtaining a win that gets the committee's attention.
I think so. It's more a matter of accumulating wins where maybe some teams around you might be picking up more losses. Tennessee's RPI is 13 right now. So, and they're in pretty good shape, and that puts them
in the tournament. They're going to make this tournament. There's no question.
Right. Right, but in terms of seeding, they're still the 13 is your 3-4 range. And they're not going to take a big hit, especially if they win games. They're not going to take a big RPI hit. So you're going to stay in that area, even if you don't have many of the significant wins to boost your resume. The interesting thing about Florida is, I was looking through the RPI this morning, Florida is only eighth in the SEC in RPI. They're just stunning. The team that I think probably has the best chance to, if they put it together, to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament, their RPI is not great. So they've got work to do too. And so that just shows the depth of the league as well. They're not going to take, with the rest of the schedule, they're not going to slip in the RPI or anything like that, I don't think, and still be in a position to, as Darren mentioned earlier, play your best basketball going into the SEC tournament and into the NCAA tournament.
So as you look, Vince, as the league starts shaping up, you mentioned, 89% or 92% chance of winning against South Carolina. South Carolina has really slipped. You know, you look at it, they were Final Four last year, and even just a few weeks ago, they're sitting there in a pack of teams where they're still probably at least had thoughts of going to the NCAA tournament. Now they've completely hit a nosedive, and they look like they're done.
Oh, I agree. I think South Carolina and Georgia very similarly have worked their way out of that conversation for the NCAA tournament. So Tennessee has two games against Georgia. Auburn, the rest of the way, has two games against South Carolina. Both of those two teams, very similar schedules, by the way, three home, three road in the final six. But, yeah, South Carolina, Chris Silva has not played well, and he started out the year hot, and ever since pretty much the Tennessee game, just hasn't been the same type of player, just really inconsistent. And so, yeah, those are opportunities for wins. And even their RPI is still good, so they're not horrible games like the SEC in the past has had, to where you play this team and your RPI is going to take a hit based on how those teams play. But it's an opportunity for wins. And, the Mississippi schools, Mississippi State played really well at Mizzou and nearly stealing that game and running off those 12 straight points and then the first five in overtime. But they came up short. They're fighting for their tournament lives too. So that's another thing you have to take into consideration is how desperate are your opponents going to be. You're in the tournament. Are they going to play at a higher level than you because of the desperation they have?
Yeah.
It works for some and it doesn't for others.
Yeah, that Mississippi State team, I agree, is one to watch that fits that category. They're one of four teams that are 6-6 in the league, and there are three that are sitting there at 6-6 at 17-8 overall. Kentucky and Texas A&M are two of them. Darren, I don't know if you got a chance to see much of Kentucky's game against Texas A&M. I did not. But Texas A&M is a team that early in the year was struggling. They're going the opposite direction of South Carolina. right now. They're moving in the right direction. And meanwhile, Kentucky's sitting there at 500 in the league.
I did not, but I was told that I didn't miss anything.
Well, from Kentucky's standpoint.
I watched every minute of it, and I'll just tell you this. Kentucky's terrible.
Kentucky's terrible.
Yeah, they're not good.
Okay.
Terrible. They look terrible at points in that game. They look terrible at a lot of points
this
season.
They're going through a rough time. And Texas A&M is number 17 mm-hmm. in the RPI after their rough start.
And now they're 21
in
the nation.
As I told Julian today when we were talking before the show, you watch. Kentucky will get a 7 seed. And let's just say it plays out, which would be great for our city. Let's say Kentucky's a 7 seed. So they get a 7-10 matchup in round one. Let's say Cincinnati comes here as the 2 seed. Okay, that makes sense, right? Geographically, you got Cincinnati, Lexington, about the same distance. They'll travel well here in the pod in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena.
What?
What?
There's no way you can send Kentucky to Nashville. Come on.
Why?
Well, we're going to have Jerry Palm on
come
later.
On.
Well, yeah, but you're doing
he
it.
He has him projected to come here.
Yeah, why not?
No way.
Jerry Palm's got him projected to go there. He's okay, but let's just say for the sake of this argument, Cincinnati's not far.
Well, Tennessee,
so
the Chamber of Commerce would thank the NCAA tournament.
Right.
It would be a
sellout. It would be, like I said, it would be great for our city. So Cincinnati wins their game against the 15 seed, and Cincinnati matches up against Kentucky, the 2 versus 7 seed. Who do you think would be the favorite?
Kentucky.
Of course, that's my point. Julian says,
no,
"Oh, they're terrible." Kentucky would be the favorite in that game.
So. I agree with you before the show that they would be, and that I'd pick them to win. But they're not a good team.
You can't say it that way. Then, if you're telling me they would be the favorite over a 2 seed and they would get to the Sweet 16,
oh,
and the
well,
2 seed
think,
would be out.
Highly,
they can't be that terrible.
I don't think highly of Cincinnati either. They have an inflated record because they play in the American.
Yeah, their schedule's been
well.
Pretty
let's
soft.
Tennis. Kentucky's got to worry about what's on their horizon. They've got at Auburn, they've got Alabama at home. Alabama, of course, is a different team away from Tuscaloosa. We know that, but still, as Vince pointed out here just a few minutes ago, when Alabama has, you know, everything working, they look really good. They've got some incredible ability on that team, and they're a team that I think, you know, if they get it all together down the stretch, it may not matter where they're playing. That's going to be a tough game for Kentucky. Then they go to Arkansas. So the next three are brutal for them.
And then after
they got
Missouri,
they got three or four more losses.
Got some,
right?
I was going to say, they have some
Missouri.
More losses.
could they go 2-4 down the stretch? Yeah, I think they could.
They go 2-4 down the stretch. They're going to have to win a few games in St. Louis.
Okay, so let me rephrase it. So Kentucky comes in as the 10 seed. Okay, they beat the 7 seeds.
You cannot award them. You cannot give them a trip to the Nationals.
Yeah, if we keep
you cannot send them to Nationals.
We keep looking Willie, at the schedule. They're going to be playing in Dayton.
Look, Willie, last year, South Carolina, what was South Carolina, 7 or 10 seed? They got to play in Greenville, South Carolina,
yeah.
And then they played 2 seed Duke, and they had a home game. So it's happened
it
before.
It wasn't supposed to be there. It
I
wasn't
know,
supposed to
I
be
know.
There. Though.
Either way, they still didn't have to put them there, and they did.
Yeah, you're whacked out state. Made that happen there, Julian.
Hey, look, man, that's all on me.
All right, we'll come back. A lot more to get into with Vince Ferrara. By the way, Jeremy Pruitt, I asked you last week, is he ever going to make this official? Is he ever going to say, you know, that he has a staff rather than it's secret, I've got a secret? He made it official since the last
that
time we
afternoon.
Talked. Yes, he did. All right, we'll come back more with Vince Ferrara next on 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Big Voice Lady. Big Voice Lady Haley. The professional soccer era has begun in Nashville. It was a wet and soggy one, but it took place over at First Tennessee Park. Nashville SC and Atlanta United. Vince, you're a soccer guy. Did you get a chance to check it out?
I did. I enjoyed it, and it obviously wasn't ideal weather, but it just shows you the craving that Nashville has for soccer, and it was a good contingent from Atlanta there as well. Kind of a narrow pitch, as they say, but just a little bit unusual in the configuration with the stands and fans all over the place. But man, you could hear the energy there, and good to get on the board with a goal. Thought Mensah looked good. Kimura, they've got some pieces. It's, you know, they were. they were outmanned for sure by an MLS club, but the fact that you got things going with soccer in Nashville, I thought was outstanding, and the fact that the fans were all there and all that terrible weather shows you how bad they want it, and it'll only get better from here, I think.
What is the gap between USL and MLS? Like, if you were using a baseball example, what is it? Is it AAA to the majors? Is it AA to AAA? What is the gap?
I would say it's probably one of those things where depth is the biggest thing that comes into play. There's probably some USL guys that can make some rosters in the MLS, but then you get into depth. So I'd say it's probably somewhere between AAA and AA if you're making a baseball analogy.
All right, good deal. So March 17th, it'll officially begin. It'll count. That was a friendly. That was just everybody's laughing. Everybody's having a good time, and they're wet. But March 17th on the road, and then their first home game will be here against Pittsburgh on March 24th. So we'll continue talking about it. I think it's going to be a huge success in this city. I think Saturday was a great gauge of where this thing is going. I think it's going to be a complete home run. The unis gave them a big thumbs up on the uniforms. What about you? I thought the uniforms were outstanding.
Yep, looked sharp. Absolutely looked sharp.
Okay, so Jeremy Pruitt was listening to your hit with us on Monday, and he said, you know what, they're right. I need to get my staff out there officially. He did that. So now we've had a chance to actually officially see his staff that he's put together. What do you think?
Well, it is everybody in the positions that we had heard and had been reported, so there wasn't really any surprises. The one thing we haven't heard is who's going to have the title of recruiting coordinator. That may also still to be determined. And the salaries of the guys is probably what stood out the most. This staff collectively, if you include the strength and conditioning coach, Craig Fitzgerald, totals out at $10.1 million. Butch Jones for this coming season. Butch Jones's staff a year ago, including their strength and conditioning coach, Rock Gullickson, totaled out to $9.1 million. So there's more money that's being invested into the overall coaching staff. Jeremy Pruitt makes up $3.81 million of that, which is a little bit less than what Butch Jones was making. So what that tells you is there is more money into his assistants. And for as good as this group is, as much as many of them have accomplished, especially in the SEC, I think these are the dollars that were necessary to get it done. And credit Tennessee for being willing to spend the money to get these high-level assistants in here. A couple other things were interesting. Tyson Helton being the only assistant coach that's over $1 million. He's at 1.2. He's not quite as experienced as some of the other guys on the staff on defense, but so for him to get that kind of dollar figure, which is almost $400,000 more than anybody else on the staff, I thought was noteworthy. Also, you got one co-defensive coordinator in Chris Rump making $805, and the other making $705 in Kevin Shear. Thought that was interesting. And then Will Friend, who's the offensive line coach, is making more than either one of those two coordinators. Robert Gillespie, same as what he made a year ago at $510,000. And then you have a couple of guys in Brian Niedermeyer and Terry Frayer that are on the low end, $255,000 and $205,000. So it's a different distribution, but it's a good group overall. I just thought some of those dollar figures were interesting. And, oh, by the way, the strength and conditioning coach, Craig Fitzgerald at $625,000. That's one of the highest paid in the country. For him to jump back in and make that kind of money is interesting as well.
Well, I know you're working on a position by position of their depth chart since National Signing Day, and you're working on that. So I know we'll talk about that on Monday. But now that National Signing Day is in the books, are they done? I mean, I know kids still can – there's still movement. You've got grad transfers and others. Do you think that they're all set? But they're 20.
No, I think they're still looking to add to this class. There's still a couple of players that are out there that have not committed. I don't know that Tennessee is in any sort of, you know, great position for any one of them, but I think that they did a shrewd move, and there's a couple of other guys that are going to be added to this class that are committed. Two defensive backs. One is Brandon Davis. He is from River Ridge, Louisiana, just outside of New Orleans, and he's a three-star kid. And then another one is from Chattanooga, in Joseph Norwood, who's a 6'2", 160-pound cornerback slash safety that they got in late on him after he decided, or Nebraska said they were full and he wasn't able to take his visit. So those guys will be added, but the shrewd move is that they are being added later on going into the fall as blue shirts. And what that does is it allows Tennessee to have scholarship positions that they can offer. And more importantly, because they're not offering blue shirt, they're able to bring any prospects that they're still trying to get a signature from and add to this class onto their campus. If you're a blue shirt, to be a blue shirt, you can't visit that school. So they are, if they were to just have blue shirt opportunities for grad transfers or for freshmen that they're trying to bring into this class, they wouldn't be able to get the best players if they only had blue shirt opportunities. They have used it on those two guys they know are coming that are a little bit lower rated. Now you still have those visits and full scholarships to be able to really go after a guy that you want, whether it's somebody to add to this class or a grad transfer. And there's a number of those quarterbacks that are out there that they can get. And I think they're trying their best to try to land one of those guys.
So it all happened after our talk last week. So get your impressions. How did you think Tennessee overall, the conference, the East, however you want to take it, how did you think signing day went? What jumped out at you?
Well, that Georgia separated from everybody, yeah, especially in the East. You just can't deny that. For them to stack up the whatever it was, 9 or 10 5 stars, depending on your service, when they're already stacked as a roster. I know they're losing some guys on defense, but you look at the roster, they already have a bunch of talent, and you can tell that they're developing that talent. And already having gone to the national championship game, they're in a great position, and then they just completely, absolutely built off of it and added even more talent that they're likely to develop as well. So you've lost some ground, I think, to Georgia, this period. So Tennessee is going to have to go catch them. I don't think they're falling back to the pack now. But overall, when you look at the class altogether, early signing period and National Signing Day together, I think it's impressive what this coaching staff did, and I think you will see them competing in the top three, top five in the 2019 class when they have a full cycle and maybe show some improvement on the field. But for National Signing Day in a bubble for itself, it was disappointing for Tennessee. They missed out on a lot of those elite players that they were in the mix for. Yes, you got to give them credit for being in the mix for them, but you wanted them and you don't get them. That's disappointing. You can't say, "Well, no, we're great. We love our class." I mean, every coach is going to say they love their class. At least they didn't lose J.J. Peterson, the linebacker that was committed to them that Alabama was still going after, but they could have had as good a outside linebacker class as anyone in the country had they been able to flip Quay Walker from his Bama commit to Tennessee. Instead, he leaves Alabama and goes to Georgia. And Tennessee lost some of those battles, a couple of the five-star corners to USC and others. So they missed out on difference-making freshmen that Georgia's been able to get and get on the field. We've seen Alabama be able to get difference-making freshmen. I don't think there are enough of those guys for them to make a jump this year, especially because last year's class didn't really show that you had that either. So that's where it's a little bit disappointing. Does that mean that they didn't do well overall? It does not. But signing day, because of the misses, I think it was a little bit of a disappointment.
Vince, the SEC Women's Tournament, of course, is in Nashville here in a couple of weeks. Tell us how it's shaping up for the Lady Vols.
Well, Lady Vols are playing better right now. They're by no means are they a dominant national championship outfit right now. I don't think so. I think their separation with Mississippi State, UConn, and pretty much everybody else, maybe Louisville could get in that mix, and Tennessee somewhere in the second group. Yeah, I think right now they'd be in really good shape to definitely host in the NCAA tournament. Right now they're tied with South Carolina and Georgia for second place in the SEC standings. They're well behind Mississippi State. They're not going to catch Mississippi State. Nobody is. But for them to finish second, win four in a row, and sort of get things back on track a little bit, I think is at least a good sign. They're 21-4 now. Turned the ball over amazing 27 times yesterday, and yet they still won going away. You know their record is 6-1 when they've turned the ball over 20 or more times.
That's not your coaching blueprint. That's for sure. Mm-hmm.
No, it drives Holly Warlick nuts. she said it in the post game yesterday. I hate it. But I think what it does is it speaks to their aggressiveness. When they're aggressive and they're playing full court and they're going after it, then they do turn the ball over. But they're also dialed in with quick hands and quick feet and turning the other team over. And that's what a lot of the game yesterday with Georgia was teams turning each other over. And at least if you're going to turn it over, you got to get it back. Why they have lulls where they play slower and they're not as engaged, I don't know. But, they're probably, I'd say, anywhere from a three or four seed, very similar to the men's team right now, and anywhere from 2-4 in seeding for the SEC tournament as well.
Last thing, Vince, opening weekend of college baseball is coming up. Vanderbilt's got a home series with Duke. Weather looks a little iffy. It could be some rain. Won't be the warmest weekend, but hopefully they'll get them in there on the turf. But who do the Vols have?
Tennessee starts out with Maryland. Hopefully their batting helmets will look nothing like their football helmets. not the best of visuals. So this Tennessee team, I think their pitching staff, they're probably going to piece it together a little bit early on. A lot of guys have had the flu, so they haven't really been able to get their full routine, their full work. But they're experienced on the mound. Have a really good 1-2 weekend punch in Zach Lingenfelter and Garrett Stallings. A number of guys that are good options, some returning guys, some that are newer guys with good arms. And I think they're going to have as fast of a outfield as you'll find in this conference. They're going to be athletic and fast. Infield, a little bit of a concern with Andre Lipsius at short. It's his new position for him. He's not a natural guy, but he is he's one that they feel the best about. And Benito Santiago's hitting lights out, their catcher. So he had a great fall, and I think is pretty dialed in, and he's gotten better behind the plate defensively. So I think Tony Vitello, I'm really impressed with the staff. I've met with almost all of them, meeting with their pitching coach, Frank Anderson, tomorrow. But I think they're going to get more out of this team. We won't know until SEC play, which is typical, and how much they can get better, though.
Have you taken in any of the Winter Olympics yet?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm surprised. Usually you're like all in on that stuff.
I want the two things that I wanted to watch for sure is hockey. Is especially maybe even so on the women's side, but then also curling too. Schedule just has not allowed me to take any of it in.
It has been kind of all jacked up with the time difference. Vinny, always a pleasure. Have a great week, and we'll do it again next Monday.
All right, guys, you do the same. Thanks for having me.
That's Vince Ferrara, WNML in Knoxville. Always good to catch up with him. We do that every Monday at noon, and there's always a ton to discuss with him at Vince Sports on Twitter. Give him a follow. I want to talk to everybody out there who's been dealing with weight loss management. I think most of us as adults, right, especially the older we get, we have to deal with this. We're never truly satisfied with our weight. Well, it's an ever-increasing field that we know is full of empty promises and yo-yo dieting and dangerous diet supplements. We've probably all been down that path. At Cool Springs MD, they provide, though, a safe and effective weight loss management solution with the support of Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who is the board-certified physician, Daphne Lodge, his wife, the registered nurse. They've been helping folks here in Middle Tennessee become healthier and happier for over 20 years. Every individual is different. They know that. And their professional staff at Cool Springs MD, they're very passionate about giving you the one-on-one attention that you deserve. Take a tour of their state-of-the-art facility, meet with their on-site trainers and counselors, and learn more about weight loss management. Find out your options and how to achieve a healthy lifestyle by calling, make an appointment at Cool Springs MD, 615-660-6900. That's 615-660-6900. Or visit their website. It's got all the details that you need to know about them. Their website is coolspringsmd.com. Jerry Palm coming up at 1 o'clock. We will get right to him. His time is going to be limited, so we're going to get to him right away. We'll talk about some of the stuff we've already been discussing. It's always fun because the media is so smart with their predictions. Hashtag sarcasm. Ha, ha, ha. SEC Tennessee was picked by the media 13th out of 14th. And I was looking at a tweet during the break. Will he care to guess what the media picked in the Big Ten for Ohio State? Where they would... Where they were ranked
preseason. I don't know, but I certainly didn't see them much on the radar in the preseason stuff. Yeah.
Well, neither did anybody else. Chris Holtmann is their coach. He's done an unbelievable job. They were picked 11th in the Big Ten. They're currently ranked 8th in the country.
11th in a 10-team league.
That's right. Well, yeah, it's the Big Ten with 14 teams. 11 of 14, and they're currently the 8th team in the country. And Tennessee has been as high as what this year? And they were picked 13 out of 14 in the SEC, and they've been, you know, ranked most of the year. So if anybody's looking to make fun of the media, there you go. There's some ammo for you.
I think every year, especially with, you know, the state of college basketball, with the turnover and the elite talent, with the one and dones, it's becoming harder to predict. There's more parity, and I think sometimes it's hard to figure out who's going to be good. Yep, but yeah, Ohio State, man, they've had a 22-5, you know, pretty good strength of schedule too. It's not like they've just piled up a bunch of wins against nobodies.
Well, and I'll ask this to Jerry Palm: is there any better? I mean, there are two great stories right there: Ohio State and Tennessee, where nobody gave them a chance. Nobody was even looking at them. They weren't on anybody's radar. And look at the seasons that they've put in. But we'll get into that with Jerry Palmer coming up at the top of the hour. It looks like Indianapolis finally got their guy. Well, and we have proof because they took pictures of him signing the contract. They made sure to get that out there social media-wise just to know that, hey, this guy actually is going to be their coach, and it's going to be Frank Reich. What do you think?
Right. Well, it's going to be something to look back on, I think, in 3 or 4 years, especially the way it all went down. Right, the guy who gets the job late, the guy that was out there the whole time, another guy that was probably penalized because he was on a team that went to the Super Bowl. In some ways, you know, it's a good thing because you're in the spotlight, but of course it makes it harder for you to get the interviews and that sort of thing. I know this, the people that were around him in Buffalo just think very highly of him. I know you got the same text I did from Pete Weber earlier today.
He's excited.
He really likes Frank Reich. He thinks Frank Reich is going to do a great job as a coach. But
can't imagine why he likes him.
Yeah, you know how it is. I mean, when you know somebody, you probably root for him a little bit more. But it's going to be really interesting to see the path of now Frank Reich and the Colts, and now the path of Josh McDaniels, who, when you handle things the way he did, he better hope it works out for him in New England, because I think there's probably some people that have him on a list right now of questionable, right? Questionable character.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Jerry Palm coming up, CBS Sports putting out there, Andy Kennedy will step down as Ole Miss's coach at the conclusion of the season.
Wow. He's been there a long time.
That was tweeted out 1 minute ago.
Yeah, Gary Parrish, also CBS Sports, had it first over there in Memphis. Kennedy will be the winningest coach in Ole Miss basketball history.
They've had a rough year.
Yeah.
Is it just not getting it done?
No. Remember they were pretty. His contract was going to 2019. Just kind of seems like they're mutually parting, whatever that means. Maybe in the same way as Mike Mularkey and the Titans. But yeah, they haven't had good years outside of Marshall Henderson years. Ole Miss really hasn't been that good. I think he's only been to one NCAA tournament.
This is his 12th year at Ole Miss. Can you believe that? 12 years at Ole Miss?
It's a long time.
How many tournaments?
I believe only one. And I think a lot of this has to do with the type of coaches you see in the SEC now. You see Rick Barnes at Tennessee. Obviously, Cal Perry has been at Kentucky for a little bit now. Bruce Pearl back down there at Auburn. Avery Johnson, Alabama. There's a lot of quality coaches, and Ole Miss kind of sees that they need to step up and find someone who can lead them into this new era of SEC basketball because Andy Kennedy's probably not good enough compared to these guys.
2007, he was the SEC Coach of the Year, but that was a long time ago. That was right at the beginning as he was their coach. But, yeah, looks like Andy Kennedy done at the end of the year at Ole Miss.
Very personable guy, likable guy. He had the issue of the, I don't know what you would call it, public drunkenness.
The taxi cab ride.
The taxi cab ride, a very embarrassing situation that he was able to weather through. I think everybody would tell you it's not an easy place to win, or Ole Miss, but he's been there for so long. It's got to be something that has been, theorized. What would it look like? It's been so long since they've changed coaches. What would just a new perspective do?
Yeah.
How would somebody do?
Andy Kennedy made it to two tournaments. This is his 12th season at Ole Miss. All right, we'll come back with Jerry Palm to kick off the fourth and final hour next on 102.5 The Game.